afternoon. Welcome to Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is May 8, 2017. Today we will be having a hearing on SB 5535, Department of Revenue, Financial Management. And John, you start off, please.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, the department is here to talk about financial management, their staffing of financial management, and their various past Secretary of State audits. And then they're also here to discuss the property tax division revenue shortfall, which has been a systemic revenue shortfall in the property tax division for quite a few of the last biennium. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess we're going to kick this off with Administrative Service Division. Shaw? Okay, when you're ready.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Manning and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sean Waite, and I'm the Administrative Services Division Administrator for the Department of Revenue. And today with me, I have...
Hi, and I'm Gary Humphrey, and I'm the Administrator of the Property Tax Division in your Department of Revenue.
So thank you. And as was already stated, we're going to be talking about finance management and then also the CAFA shortfall within the property tax division. I'm going to start off with the finance management discussion. So we had discussed several of the topics that I'm going to address today, not in a lot of detail last week, but today I will discuss it more in detail as far as my staffing plan and also what has resulted from our Secretary of State audits and kind of a status update of where we're at, and then also my staffing plan that actually some of the activities have already been implemented or completed, but I wanted to share those with you as well. Some of these slides that you will see in the first half of this, you already saw during first round, but I wanted to give you some updates. So as you can see in this slide, there are four main components within the finance section. So we have the purchasing team or procurement team, and I'll speak to them in more detail later on. We also have our payroll functions. Both the purchasing team and payroll report directly to me. Then another direct report is my budget and finance manager, and that position oversees the budget team and also the accounting team. I would like to note that during first round, we had identified in our org chart that our finance manager position was vacant. We have since filled that position. And once I talk more about the budget team later on in this presentation, you will see or hear that the budget team is now fully staffed for the first time in quite some time. So pretty happy about that. So this slide you've also seen as well. This is the finance and administration piece, so my position plus all the finance staff for the governor's budget. There's 16 positions and 16 FTE. We have $8.25 million in general fund and then another $2.54 million in other fund. And so the cost allocation component for the finance section makes up the other fund component of the 2.3%. And I will talk a little bit more about the cost allocation system and what I'm looking at for the future of that system later on in the presentation. So, as I said, the finance manager position has been filled. So that is an update from the last presentation I did in round one. To give you a little background, so there has been really some significant instability in the finance section related to vacancies, turnover, and just positions. So I really want to talk about that and some of the measures that we're doing to improve things to make sure we get staff and that we get staff trained and we do things well. So the finance manager position was vacant back in December 2015. And so I'll give you a little bit of history there. So when I was hired into Department of Revenue, I was hired as a finance manager. About a month after I was hired as a finance manager, the ASD administrator accepted another position with the DAS CIO's office. So I took over temporarily both positions. We attempted to do three recruitments. They ended up in failed recruitments. But part of,
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Senator. Why?
So, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, there were a couple different reasons for that. First, one of the things that we were looking for in a finance manager is somebody that could hit the ground running, that knew state budget, and that could provide the support that was needed for our LFO and our DAS CFO analyst. We also needed somebody that had some understanding of how accounting and budget worked, and we were unable to find that skill set.
I'm still pondering your answer. Mm-hmm. Was it they didn't want to work for revenue? The pay wasn't right? Because that particular skill set, agencies hire for that all the time. It's somebody that can work the arcane practice of state budgeting, which is not without its complications, but people do that all the time. Little tiny agencies, big agencies. So I'm trying to figure out if there were any other lessons learned. Were there interviews after the candidates? Did they withdraw, or did you just not like the pool? Or was there any after action that said, this is what's wrong with? I mean, three recruitments failing is a pretty big deal. Did DAS do them for you and screw them up in some way? Or did you use the DAS process? Give us a little more meat here.
Sure. So, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, we did go through the regular recruitment process as statewide policy provides. I did solicit feedback from attributes that our LFO analyst and DAS CFO analysts were looking for. And so as we were going through the pool for the first round, we did not find anybody that met the skill set that was needed. The other two, given the budget situation and also where we're at in the budget development process, it was hard to find a good pool of candidates that would qualify for that position.
They didn't want to deal with me.
Possible. What's the, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What's the salary definition of principal exec, what, HI? What?
So, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, that particular position is an E-level position, and comparative to other positions that manage that level of, as far as the accounting and budget, most of those positions are actually PEMFs in the state.
Okay. One more.
Go ahead.
It's a pretty big job, and it says December of 15 up there. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty long time. Mm-hmm. What was the sense of urgency in the agency? Like, were you just in continuous recruitment, or the house is on fire and somebody called 911? What was the sense of urgency?
So, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, it was a significant sense of urgency for the entire agency, including myself. There was a lot of work done after the first recruitment to really evaluate, is the scope of the job something as far as the different disciplines that position manages? Do we need to take a look at that and break that up a little bit so that we can get qualified candidates that can manage the accounting and budget area? And I have to say for myself, it was significantly a sense of urgency because I was doing two jobs at that time. What we have found is that it's really hard to find somebody that has multiple disciplines in this area of skill set.
One last question. The horse isn't quite dead yet. The director talked about an enterprise-level engagement and that you gave up a position for the good of the whole. anybody go to the good of the whole and say, we've got a significant position that needs to be filled here? Can we borrow somebody from another agency? Can you help us out here?
So, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, yes, I did that at several levels. I met with some individuals with DAS CFO, even asked our analysts, do you know of anybody that would be interested or available? Given the situation where we were at with budget development, most people said they couldn't spare anybody and that, you know, it was a critical time for their agency.
Okay. Thank you.
So we have appointed a member of our existing budget team to the finance manager position as work out of class. We are going to revisit the recruitment process following the end of the session when perhaps people that meet the qualifications and skill set would feel more comfortable leaving an agency because it's not an absolute critical time. So the next area I want to discuss is the accounting area. So we have six positions, six FTE. And during the 2013 regular session, the accounting manager position was eliminated as part of the administrative reductions that occurred. Since then, we have realized significant turnover in that accounting manager position. So since 2013, we've had four different managers in that position. And it's not even really its own position, like I said, because it has been eliminated. We have been filling the accounting manager position, which is a PEMD, off of our procurement manager position.
Four turnovers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Were there any exit interviews? Were there any common themes?
Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, yes, I spoke with three of them. I wasn't there for one of them. But all of them were looking for some stability and a permanent position to be in, not a double fill position. And they were also looking for, most of them, except for one, went to private sector and received an increase in pay.
With all the vacancies that you have and your seeming willingness to burn positions and double fill, and had you guys thought about coming and asking for legislative permission to change the job description? I mean, I don't know over what period of time this happened, whether there was an intervening session, a short session. I'm just trying to figure out, when did the flare go up that this was serious?
So, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, I'm not aware of when that came up because I wasn't at the agency yet. When I came to the agency, it was already a double-filled position. So we had included some administrative positions within our policy option package 102, and that piece of it was not approved.
Was not approved to go forward in a budget request or not approved by the legislature?
Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, it is not in our governor's budget. Okay. But so let me clarify. So I have been working very closely with the LFO staff to talk about the importance of this position and the need for stability within that group. And we have agreed that we would talk here about how we could get that position made permanent.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So I also want to talk a little bit about some of the staffing impacts that we've had. We talked a little bit about CSR during round one. So CSR has two accountant positions dedicated to it, and they will be returning back to us January 1 of 2018. But again, that has reduced the capacity within our accounting unit to complete the duties that we need, and there's some reflection of that in our Secretary of State audits that I'll discuss later. One of the things that we also have is about 75% of the accounting team that we have now is new and has been with the agency for 3 years or less. So one of the things that we have done is there's not necessarily a statewide accounting training, and that is something that there is an accounting manager, financial manager committee that's been formed statewide to address some of these issues. So in order to get my staff trained, I've been having them work very closely with the DAS CFO office in their SARS unit, which is their statewide accounting and reporting group. And then I'm also making sure that they attend different trainings that are offered through Chemeketa or other statewide opportunities. As I've said before, in round one, I did hire a retiree that served as an accountant for many years with the Department of Revenue. He has come in and provided training, and I will discuss a little bit more about other things that have been accomplished with his help as we move through year-end activities. Also, one of the things that the team has been faced with is working out of multiple systems. So we have our legacy system, which is the ITA system, and then Gentax, and then SFMS, which is our statewide financial management system. So the Secretary of State did report that pulling data out of multiple systems can lead to mistakes or errors, and that's what we have been seeing the last 3 years. We are working on training. We'll also slowly be phasing out that ITA legacy system and only working out of Gentax and SFMA. So we are hopeful that, you know, those errors will be reduced.
Are you keeping a log at all? And I don't know if this is Ms. Mack's purview, but it was interesting talking to some colleagues earlier today, and just in the course of making casual conversation, they said, what are you doing this afternoon in committee? And I said, DOR, and the response was, oh, God, do we have problems with them? Are you logging the issues that are coming forward in any consistent way so that you know whether the citizen complaints can help you target some of the difficulties with those three systems, or like with the Division of Child Support or any of the other places? So do you keep track of those?
So Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, I would have to defer if you'd like Deanna to come up.
I would.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, and Senator Johnson. Sorry, my voice carries a little bit.
For the record, your name, please.
For the record, I'm Deanna Mack with Department of Revenue, and we do keep a log. We have two-year retention on the log for constituent complaints, and I absolutely use those as a canary system for if there's something wrong in any of our systems. We work with management on a regular basis to make sure that that the issue is resolved if it is systemic and not just related to a particular taxpayer. An example of that is last season when we had the refund delay issues that we've talked to you about. We have not had any kind of near the number of refund, where's my refund questions this year, because we were able to switch those levers in our system as a result of the contact we had both in our tax services unit and as through legislative and governor's office complaints.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I don't want to break the flow of the presentation, but if it would be possible to have Ms. Mack back again, following up on our conversation about liens and tax liens, I had the weekend to ponder that, and it caused me to have a bunch more questions, both on the corporate side and on the personal taxpayer side, about how that list works and how your system works. And so I'd like to be able to have a little chat at the end of the hearing.
Okay. You got that, Jen? Thank you.
Okay, so I'll continue on with the budget team. So the budget team reports directly to the finance manager. They perform budget and execution functions. One of the things that we are moving towards is automating our financial reports, so there isn't a lot of manual data entry into spreadsheets. This will assist in reducing errors in our budget to actual reports and also provide just a more automated and faster way to generate reports to get information out to not just internal agency, but to our stakeholders at DAS CFO and LFO. We're also working on, since two of our three staff members have less than 3 years of state budget experience, we are working on training for them. So we are working closely again with DAS CFO, and they have offered up to provide what we call PICS and ORBITS training when we do reconciliation of LAB, so that we can get staff fully trained on those systems and provide better and accurate information.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Kutcher. How does that compare with other state agencies of like size in terms of the 2 out of 3 staff have less than 3 years? Is that a trend that we had seen throughout all of state government, or is that just a Department of Revenue trend?
So, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Co-Chair Smith, this is a pretty lean budget team. Only having 3 analysts makes it fairly difficult to do a lot of the heavy analysis. But one of the things that I think is going to happen is that the Department of Revenue's budget really is not that difficult. I think with the automation and training of staff, that we will have sufficient staffing to make sure that our projections and analysis occur correctly.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So also, one of the things that I would like to address is our manual process and specifically cost allocation. So over the past several months, I've had conversations off and on with our LFO analysts, and I share a concern that he does as well, as far as, does the methodology still make sense? Is this still a good cost allocation process? The cost allocation system that we use is really an outdated access database system and has to be manually updated by IT support staff. And so this is something that we are looking at. There was a study done by DAI Management back in 2007, but again, that was 10 years ago, and it's definitely time to revisit this, make sure that the methodology is appropriate. So as you'll see in my staffing plan and strategic planning moving forward, beginning next biennium, I will be in further discussion with LFO and our DAS CFO to discuss methodology. Does it make sense? How can we refine it better to reflect the work that our administrative support's actually doing for each program and revenue source? So I'd like to go to procurement now. We have 4 positions in that area, and what this chart really reflects is the volume of our specifically IGAs and contracts. So our IGAs, as you can see, have significantly increased in December. That is related to the marijuana tax program. And so we've really entered into with our local government and county partners, and also with Oregon State Police, a total of 240 marijuana tax program IGAs in this last year. So there's a significant workload increase with the implementation of this program. The other big spike that you'll see is our intergovernmental agreements for our collections, and that's associated with the groups that we do collections for, either other agencies, universities, so forth. And again, I do want to clarify that our procurement staff doesn't have authority to do any procurements that are $150,000 and over. Those all get sent to DAS for processing.
Mr. Chair? Uh-huh. How timely is DAS in getting back to you?
So, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, they're very responsive. We've seen a significant increase in their customer service and timeliness this past biennium.
Good. Thank you.
Yes. So, the next area is payroll. This We have one position FTE in this area, and I'm going to address a little bit what I've done over the last few months as part of a concern of segregation of duties. So historically, we've had just one person processing payroll. So that means that person could touch their own payroll, which was a red flag to me right away and something that I knew I needed to take care of. But one of the things that I found is we were having trouble finding support for the payroll area because the Department of Revenue operates on their own payroll system. It's an e-timekeeping system, but not the DAS statewide system. That system was put into place many years ago and is actually part of the cost allocation conversation that we're going to need to have because the payroll system ties into this access database so that the personal services costs can be allocated appropriately. But we really feel like that both systems are becoming outdated and we need to move forward. So we will be looking at that. So as I said before, one of the things that I was concerned about was the segregation of duties. So I asked for internal audits to take a look at how are we doing overall in payroll. And this started because we had a payroll person coming back to DOR. DOR had participated in a pilot project of shared payroll services between DOJ and DCBS. And when that disbanded, the one individual came back. That raised a concern, again, like I said, segregation of duties, and what do we do to mitigate that process? The internal audit was completed in March of 2017. We did find that there were no significant deficiencies in that process. And the one thing that they just wanted to make sure is sometimes we were a little more generous than maybe the contract bargaining agreement or statewide DAS payroll policies. So we are making sure that we are in alignment with that. I have also brought in a temporary work assignment or job rotation individual to serve part-time as a payroll technician so that she can back up our existing payroll position and also help us with reconciliations. So next, I would like to talk about the Secretary of State audit findings and address where we're at with those and other mitigating actions that we have taken. So we did have some material weaknesses 2011 and through 2016. 2012 and 13 weren't necessarily material weaknesses, but some recommendations for improvement that involved the reconciliation and recording accruals appropriately. And so we have taken some steps, like I've said, to mitigate the cash reconciliation issue. So in our strategic plan, we have planned that, and in our management response to the Secretary of State, we said that we would be caught up on all reconciliations no later than September 2017. I'm happy to say that all reconciliations are now current. So we not only met that deadline that we identified with Secretary of State, but we have exceeded it. Also, as noted in the findings, that we are inexperienced, we're working in two systems, which has led to some of the unrecorded financial transactions and accrual issues. Again, we have hired the retired accountant four back, and he is working with the accounting team to put in procedures in place, desk manuals, so that year-end activities will be pulling transactions appropriately and booking them appropriately. So he is helping train the staff to make sure that our year-end data that we're collecting and building our accruals off of is correct. He's also...
We have a question here, Senator Jones.
Throughout almost the totality of today's presentation, you've talked about studying, reviewing, training. Have you done any kind of internal risk analysis on how vulnerable the agency and by extension Oregon is while you guys seem to struggle to get your financial house in order?
So, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, Senator Johnson, we haven't done a formal risk analysis. I do recognize that there are some risks as far as the reconciliations. The Secretary of Audit findings said that we were not timely in our reconciliations last year, not that we didn't do them. So we are doing them. They're just not within the time frame that we have committed ourselves to do them. When it comes to the year-end financial close, that is concerning to me, and we do work very closely with the DAS CFO's office, their SARS unit. When making our financial statements whole, we identify post-closing adjustments if there are errors. They monitor our financial statements very closely. This is an area that I do believe we need to identify a risk and have a risk analysis and plan in place, and I just have not had time to do all that yet.
Okay.
So one of the audit findings as well was strength, knowledge, skills, and abilities. And so where we're at with that, you know, we are working again with trying to come up with a statewide plan for training our accountants. That has been an area that has been very difficult to find training on year-end activities. So, for example, somebody could be a CPA and come into state government, and governmental accounting is much different than public accounting. So there is, regardless, a learning curve. So we are reaching out to try and figure out what is the best plan to train our accountants moving forward. So, again, we...
A question on that.
Sure.
Do we have an internship program within the Department of Revenue?
So, Co-Chair Smith, I believe we, no. We don't. No, I'm sorry, we don't.
Yeah, let me just share this really quick. So my son's about to start a second year of law, and he's shared with me that there's students in there that really have a desire to get into tax law. Why wouldn't we be reaching out to these capable young women and young men, and some of them aren't so young, and trying to see if there's a career path for them?
So, Co-Chair Smith.
That's something the state doesn't do. I don't know how that works.
So, I'm not sure who has the gavel. Co-Chair Manning.
Co-Chair Manning, yes, sorry.
It's okay. Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Co-Chair Smith. I know that there are some agencies that have internships. We do have student workers, but again, that's not considered an internship. And that's something that I can go back and talk to our leadership team about.
To me, it just seemed like there's a lot of talent out there. And granted, you may end up losing them in the future. But if there's a way for us to grab that talent for 3-4 years at a time, it would benefit us and it would benefit these young women and young men.
Director, did you have something?
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee. I'm Nia Ray, Director of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Co-Chair Smith, I just wanted to, I don't have all of the details, but I know that the governor's office and DAS were working on a pilot program for internships earlier this year. I'm not aware of the status, as I said, but there were certain agencies that were participating. The requirements and the qualifications for the individuals that they were pursuing for internships didn't quite fit within the Department of Revenue skill sets, so we did not participate. But if there is more information that you'd like to pursue, I would contact DAS.
I'm just at that stage in life where I have kids, you know, who are pursuing that, and so I'm hearing these conversations among the 24, 25, 26 year olds who are in their sixth year of college who are interested in this, but they're not sure how to pursue it. And so maybe it's something we ought to be thinking about in the future. Again, I'm not an expert on it, but to me, I'm hearing this among that generation.
Chair Smith, Chair Manning, and members of the committee, we will consider that.
Okay. Okay, so the next couple slides, and I believe it may be posted out on OLIS already, but it's a high-level staffing plan and kind of action plan for what is going to be happening in the accounting and budget section over the next biennium. So first, the staffing, like I've said several times, we've hired a retired accountant four to help with procedures for year-end activities and provide training for our accountants. This person's also assisted us with completing our reconciliations and making sure that training occurred for those reconciliations. We will have two accountants returning from the CSR project in January of 2018. And then finance will be attending a SARS training, which is a year-end training coming up shortly that they hold. Again, we have I have a target completion date for the reconciliations of August 2017. I kept that there because although we are caught up, my intent is that we remain caught up for the remainder of the biennium and moving forward. So I wanted to emphasize that we are going to make sure that all of our reconciliations are done timely and they're done in alignment with year-end activities. This is continuing the plan. So one of the things that when I first started working at Department of Revenue is I was looking at their accounting structure and how they utilize that in the financial system. So I believe that we're not using the accounting structure to its fullest capability. And so I'm going to be working with LFO and DAS CFO. We're going to be aligning our budget, our accounting structure, ensuring our cost allocation is in alignment so that we are recording expenditures appropriately and it's easier for us to report out to the status of the actual where we're at for the agency. Also, one of the things that we're doing is we are cleaning up other fund limitation, which there are some areas within our agency that we have technically empty other fund limitation, which means we don't have a revenue source for it. So we're just doing some of that cleanup work to make sure that our budget is not overstated. So, and as I said, we are working on desk procedures as well, so that as, you know, we may have turnover, we do have people that could retire in the next few years, that as they move on, we will still have something in place that an incumbent could come in and pick up where they left off.
Representative Gumberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. Could we go back to the first slide that you had under the response to the audit? Thank you. I wanted to zero in for a moment, if I could, the audit finding or material weaknesses. And I looked over the last six audits that we've done over the course of 20 years and read in detail the most recent one, the most recent performance audit. I'm looking at your points here, but I'm also zeroing in on some recommendations that were made in the last performance audit. And Mr. Chairman, if I could, I just wanted to touch on the three main points that I'm seeing in here. First of all, preparing meaningful annual reports on debt collection relevant to the public and policymakers. Second, to help agencies adopt successful collection tools. And third, develop short and long-term plans for a sustained focus on debt collection. I didn't see those on your list. Could you just help put that in context for me?
Yes, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Representative Gomberg. So these are only the financial audit findings from my finance group. Those are actually related to the program area.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I was testifying on some bills in another committee and maybe didn't get the overall context here, but I'm always anxious to jump in and talk about debt collection.
Well done.
And so for that, it concludes my presentation on finance management, and I'll turn it over to Gary.
All right. Co-Chairs Manning and Smith and members of the committee, again, my name is Gary Humphrey, and I'm the Property Tax Division Administrator at the Department of Revenue. And I appreciate the opportunity to come back and talk to you a little bit more about funding for the property tax system. When we when we talked a little bit in March, and even in prior years, some you've seen and your staff alluded to earlier, some of this this county assessment function funding assistance account, we'll go ahead and flip there, that it's intended to help augment, fund some of the property tax system. And so what we were what we started to talk about is just this growing kind of difference between what's available and the expenses that it's intended to cover. So I'll talk a little bit more about that then today, and then some possible funding considerations. When I get to that, I'm just going to preface it that these are just ideas that have been explored before. We don't have a recommendation or a proposal for you today in terms of a revenue, additional revenue, but just to talk about some of the ideas that have been floating out there. So CAFA, again, stands for County Assessment Function Funding Assistance. It's a program that's been around since 1989, at a time when the legislature was looking at some of the hits that have been taken at the, particularly at the county level, to the revenues available to fund their assessment and taxation functions within the counties. So this was set up as a way to help augment that additional funding. So it comes from, the sources are recording fees. So you put in place, or the legislature put in place, an amount of recording fees, a certain amount of the dollars that go into this CAFA fund, and also dedicated a certain amount of interest earnings on delinquent property taxes that go into these CAFA, this CAFA fund. So these are amounts the counties report to us on, and go into this to this fund that is then we administer at the Department of Revenue, a grant program where we look at the costs that the county has to perform their assessment taxation functions. We look at that across the state. We review what they submit to us, and then we certify a certain level of costs, and then we apply a percentage then to the available dollars in CAFA to dole out, to send out to the counties to help offset, to help with the costs of assessment taxation, and the department keeps a 10% share.
Senator?
I have never understood this, and I've asked you the same question for a number of years. How do you decide which counties are meritorious to get what grants, and how do you watch frequent flyers? And I'm thinking some counties are more impecunious than others. How do you make these internal judgments about which counties get a grant?
Dr. Manning, Senator Johnson, it's all the counties are eligible for it. So they all submit an application. They were actually due a week ago to send to the department. They're all eligible for some amount of grant to offset expenses. So in this case, it's not a issue of which counties are really should get a grant or in a position where they, we've looked at all their funding. We've just looked at the expenses that they have that qualify for the grant, and then we apply a percentage. We talk about some counties are what they'll call donor counties, and some are then more net recipients. So there are some counties who actually, some of your larger counties, that are actually put more money into the pot through recording fees and interest than they get back in a CAFA grant. So there are some counties like that, but then all of them are eligible for the grant, and all will receive some amount as long as they meet all the qualifications.
It just seems to me to be kind of a cumbersome way to do it. You cream off 10% for your administration. Is there a more streamlined way to do it? If I'm Curry County, do I find this equitable? And I picked that one because it's probably teetering the closest to bankruptcy.
Co-Chair Manager, Senator Johnson, they'll have their expenses and their share of the pot. I mean, we don't, they definitely have, and this session have come in and talked a bit about their situation, particularly Curry County, talking about them. And so they get a grant amount, but the counties are all, depending on the mix of accounts and the work that they have, not everybody's the same in terms of what their need is for resource. So we're evaluating their need against the whole state and all the other counties to figure that out. But is it working? That, I think, was part of your question, is that working? And I think that's part of this presentation today a little bit, is to talk about where maybe it isn't working as well to fund what they need. And they came forward and asked for, in another bill, they've asked for an alternative way or something additional.
I can just remember, as I'm sure Co-Chair Smith can, having sat in this committee for a long time, the lamentations of Mr. Riddell. And when he leaves, I don't know who is going to come in and whine as pitifully about don't touch CAFA. And I'm just curious if it's working, and when the counties lose their principal advocate to retirement, how's this going to work out for them?
Yeah, I think Co-Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, I think part of the issue that we've seen in the funding is that some of those, particularly the counties like Curry and others that tends to be focused more the Southwest counties, have been hit by some of the other funding sources they've lost, particularly timber-related revenue, federal government subsidies. And they've lost that, and it's hurt them more than many other counties. So, yeah.
Thank you.
That's...
So they changed it.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. How were funds used? So we've talked a little bit about their split between the counties and the Department of Revenue. 90% is sent out in the form of these CAFA grant distributions to the counties. 10% is eligible to be used for the Department of Revenue to offset our expenses of administration. And those are primarily related to appraisal work that is done on industrial properties and on centrally assessed businesses. That's where we have appraisal work that we do that we then determine a value when we send that, transmit that to the counties, and they put a tax on the roll. And most of that's there. We do have one position that is involved with administering the grant program at the department, and so we do have some resource that is just needed to actually look at all the applications. We review them. We do review the applications to look at the expenditures, make sure it all seems reasonable, and then figure out how much grant they're eligible to receive.
How often do you get appeals off of that work? I'm just wondering, with the highly volatile real estate market right now that exists in Oregon, and the fact that you may not go out and look at the properties, that there may be some review of historic records, how often are you questioned on the accuracy of your appraisal?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Co-Chair Manning, Senator Johnson. So the appeals related to the values that we determine. I thought you were talking about appeals on the amount of the grant. We don't really get appeals on the grant itself from counties. But as far as, yes, we definitely
No, I wouldn't appeal on free money either.
Yeah, well, unless you wanted more, maybe. But so we definitely get appeals on the valuations we put on industrial properties or on centrally assessed businesses. There's a process for central assessment where it goes through at the Department of Revenue, the director level, actually, where there's a review of that and a decision made in the summer, and then by August 1st, and then that, then they can appeal onto the court. And we do, of course, have appeals that go into the tax court and on. And we also do for certain industrial properties. So I don't have numbers on how many of those we have, but we definitely get appeals.
Mr. Chair, the reason I ask is that forestry on a much smaller scale has just gone through a process where they characterize land in a certain way for the purpose of fire assessment. And they did it using Google Earth, and it was a 2.5-year process, and the yowls of inaccuracy you could hear all the way from Astoria down here. And they ended up having to do a large redo on it. And so I was just curious how often there are questions and what the appeal process is, and you answered that.
Okay. So that's the, so again, that's really where the money that we, as far as the 10% share for Department of Revenue, really goes into these, into those areas of the work on those accounts. So the next slide is one that could be familiar. I showed this to you in March, and you've seen a very similar one. And if you've been, well, for those that have been on this committee anyway, I've probably seen it a couple of years ago and even a year ago when we had a conversation in the February session, showing over time kind of this growing discrepancy between the available CAFA revenues to the Department of Revenue compared to the expenses that we have. And really simply, it's kind of a matter that the revenues themselves have stayed relatively flat recently, so they're not really increasing and not projected to increase over time. The expenses, of course, will increase with whatever COLAs and all. Well, I appreciate it. I told Sean earlier, I said I should have brought that bottle of water. So thank you. So the expenses increase as salaries increase, other expenses of doing business and inflation. And so this graphic is to show some of that growing kind of discrepancy and leads then to the Department of Revenue's request for additional funding. It has been general fund that we requested and that you a year ago or a little over a year ago then provided some additional general fund to get us through this biennium. And then, of course, it's an ongoing issue, though, of how we do that, how we cover that funding. The graphic on the right is one that I showed you a couple months ago also about the same problem exists at the county level. So you mentioned Gil Riddell a little bit ago from the Association of Oregon Counties. And I know if you've listened to him, he's talked about how originally CAFA was intended to cover up to like 30% of the costs in the county. Mm-hmm. But it's been trailing off. And so that's really what this graphic is to show over just the last few years, how it's dipped down to below 20%. About 18% is the percentage of county assessment taxation costs covered by CAFA compared to what he said, you know, was the goal of 35. So it continues to then become a problem at the county level also of how much funding they have available and they can count on from CAFA. So they would have to augment from their own general fund equivalent to cover the expenses.
Given the pressure on general fund this biennium, what's plan B? What if there isn't an infusion of general fund?
Well, let's go to some of these options and potentially we could talk about. And so, again, my disclaimer at the beginning, these are things that have been talked around as possible options to do in the past. We have not developed really any of these in any length. There's no stakeholder group that's gotten together and said, hey, this is a good idea. So we don't have any recommendations or proposal for one, but we can talk about them as potential changes to help fund that. The first one just talks about increases to recording fees that are dedicated to property tax administration. So right now, of some of the recording fee, there's a $9 amount that goes into the CAFA account. That could be changed by the legislature to be something different. It actually was a higher amount years ago. Then the amount was ratcheted back, but as my understanding is the base number of documents that it applied to was broadened, so it applied to a broader base of documents, the fee. So the fee could be adjusted somehow. I think you have a bill or had a bill before the legislature this session that from another agency asking about recording fee changes. So you could do something there. For delinquent interest, I mentioned about how much of that goes into CAFA, or that's a source. So part of it goes into CAFA. There's actually two tiers to the interest, and tier one of the delinquent interest collected, 25% is the minimum kind of that goes into CAFA, and there's a tier two that's another 25% that was added years ago. It actually, tier one actually ends up being a little more than that. So the interest rate is like 16% on property tax debt. So of that 16% interest amount, there's a portion that comes back through CAFA. So at least 50% or more of that interest comes into CAFA. You could do something with interest. The rest goes into other districts, other places that the interest income goes. Property tax discount. I think that's been brought up perhaps this session too. There is the discount of 3% that you're familiar with. That's a significant amount of money that is represented by the discount. Would there be a way to somehow look at that, whether you funnel some of that back then through CAFA or some other way? You could potentially look to the discount, but of course that has ramifications about, you know, how beneficial is it, how much really gets paid then timely because of the discount. So there would be a lot, I think, to think about there if we were to do something with the discount.
Mr. Humphrey, could you elaborate a bit more on the discount? Who's entitled to the discounts, and in terms of volume, what does that look like?
Property, Co-Chair Manning, the property taxpayers are all properties, I think, are eligible for a 3% discount for paying by November 15, by the due date. So if you pay it by then, you get a 3% discount. There's a 2% discount offered if you, I think, put it into two payments. I don't remember when the second payment is
okay,
due.
Okay, so the way they have it broken down in terms of how you pay it, if you pay it all at one time before a particular date, then you pay this amount. If you make two payments, then it's going to look like this. If there are additional payments, it'll look like something else.
Yeah. And Coach Manning, what we've – I was talking to our research section that tracks a lot of this, and they were saying definitely by far the majority of folks take advantage of the full 3% discount. They don't wait toward 2% or to pay it later. Not that there aren't later payments, but most get advantage of the full 3%. It's like $150 million a year or so that's represented by that discount that comes off property tax revenue.
Okay, so what that sounds like is that there was a carrot that was out there that a lot of people took advantage of the carrot. So when they did the assessment of the property, was there a consideration or should there be a consideration that most people are going to take advantage of the 3%, so maybe if the property value was assessed at a different level, or just trying to throw some questions out there.
Yeah, Coach R. Manning, I haven't heard of any tie between the two in terms of looking at them together in terms of the value versus the discount. I mean, the value is derived for real market value per statute to figure out what the value should be, and then the tax is computed, and the discount is offered on the tax. So I don't. We could look at some way to tie the two. I haven't heard of how to tie those two together.
So as the market fluctuates up and down property values and stuff, the 3% is going to be there. So it probably wouldn't make much difference.
Coach Armani,
for those that pay off early.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to mix up the 3% here with something you've heard about or familiar with maximum assessed value, growth in your value. So the value that you pay tax on for your property is also governed by this maximum assessed value thing that came out of Measure 50 many years ago. So that determines a lot around what value is actually there, and then the tax is separate. So it's controlling a bit the growth in value to limit how much it can, which also then limits a little bit of this up and down you're referring to with property values. Help cushion it, if you will.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So do some counties then contract with you to do all collections and appraisals?
Co-Chair Manning, Senator DeBoer, not – the only real appraisals we do are the ones that are required of us. We do have for industrial properties and the centrally assessed businesses. We do have some counties that have property that would be a county responsible account who will ask us if we will do it for them. So if for some reason it's a type of property they think they know we have the expertise that we could do, then we may take that on and do that appraisal work. So there's those. Otherwise, we support the counties in their work, so we'll have them come to us and they want training or they want assistance on an appeal or some complex property, and we may be able to help them out, so we'll help provide some assistance. But we don't actually do the appraisal for them in those situations. So distribution amounts for CAFRA revenues, I mentioned they're 90%, 10% right now, 90% to counties, 10% to Department of Revenue, so you could adjust that, but some of these have a trade-off. I mean, you could make a change to what the state gets, but it's going to impact what the local governments get, and so there's that trade-off. But you could do something there. The increased amount from general fund, that, of course, is the one that has typically been happening, so that's just been more of a general fund contribution to the department for our costs. State responsible versus county responsible counts, we just kind of touched on that with Senator DeBoer's question. There are certain properties over $1 million of value is what's considered state responsible, and then county has below that level. You could change those levels somehow, but again, this really would be shifting. If you ratcheted up that level, then the county would take on responsibility. Well, that may work well in some counties, particularly some of the larger ones. It may not work well at all for some of the smaller counties, but you could to control the costs at the state level. And then property tax revenues generally is on here as an option. Somehow to take out of, because right now where it's mostly general fund except for this CAFA contribution, we're not really taking at the state level costs very much that really relates to the property tax revenue stream. So there could be something there, but of course anything done there has a trade-off with less revenue than for local governments. But you could look at something like that.
Mr. Humphrey, can I ask you to go back to slide 15, please? Okay, I'm looking at the on the left side where you have the agency charges to CAFA and the agency's 10%. That's the 10% that you're getting. And there's a lot of space in between those two lines and stuff. What is how is that space? I mean, like, what are the dollars and stuff, or positions? Are there positions that are not funding? Or how is that? Could you help me understand what that means?
Co-Chair Manning, I look at that right now because of our limit. I mean, we can't spend more. So I know we've labeled that line as agency charges to CAFA. That's almost really a pro forma or whatever type of calculation you'd say what it would be if we were charging consistent with the pattern of what CAFA was intended for at the department. If we were trying to keep up with it, that would be that. We're not going to charge more than what we have available. So we have $4 million approximately for this biennium that's going to be DOR related. So that's what we'll actually charge to CAFA. But this is intended to show you kind of that difference between if things were keeping going at the rate that they have, if we're calculating the cost, and I know Sean's going to talk a little bit more about this in a couple slides, but a time study that we did. But really, that's kind of a pro forma calculation of what those expenses would be.
Would be.
Yeah.
Not. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So total CAFA receipts right now are about $40 million, 35
yes.
to $40 million. And is that all from the recording fee? Or it's got some general fund in it, too, it sounds like?
Co-Chair Manning, Representative Marsh. That $40 million, is that all composed of that those components, recording fee revenues, delinquent interest? Delinquent interest is actually the larger portion. And then there's some interest earnings on the account, which aren't huge, but are also in there. So it's those two primary components that make up that $40 million.
Follow up. I'm sorry. If you said, I didn't hear what the charge, the actual recording fee charge is.
Co-Chair Mannings, Representative Marsh. Let me flip back to it here. The recording fees right now under statute, so ORS 205.323, I think this is what you're asking about, is the statute that talks about the recording fees at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dollar of that. A dollar of recording fee goes to the Oregon Land Information System. You may have heard it referred to as the ORMAP system. $9 goes into the CAFA fund.
Oh, nine, you said, right.
$20. So there's $20 that goes into the CAFA account, but then is sent directly to housing. And so that's kind of where that hopefully
follow-up comes and from. How much does the $9 produce?
Chair Manning, Representative Barsh, it represents about $650,000 to $750,000 a year for the for the department's share, with the 10% share that comes to the state.
Okay, so just for your share. So in totality, I mean, because a part of that goes back to the counties, right? So it's that number times 10?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair and member of the subcommittee, Representative Marsh, in rough terms, about $40 million a biennia. So is the total of which they keep 10%. I think in the past it's been higher. I think the all-time peak, if I recall correctly, was right around $48 million or so. And it is now in a period of leveling off around the $40 million mark the last few biennia. If that's correct, Mr. Humphreys, can...
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, thank you for the correction. So can I just make sure now I understand it correctly? So $40 million is coming in. $650,000 is from the recording fee, or
Co-Chair Manning, Representative Marsh. John was giving you a biennial figure, so that's a annual figure of just the part that relates to the recording fee. So you double that for a biennium. That's just and that's only the share that comes to the state. So the 10% share.
So is divided into 10%. That's what I was confused about. So
we just get 10%, 10% of the CAFA pot comes to the Department of Revenue, and it's made up of all those components. I was just trying to break down for you what the recording fee portion represents. The balance, most of it's like 65% comes from delinquent interest.
Just follow up. I guess if part of our assignment here is to look at alternative or increases into the current income sources to make up some of this gap, be helpful to know what those component, more detail about what those components actually provide to us.
Yeah, okay. Representative Marsh, yeah, we can provide that, or we're working with staff on that too.
Yeah, thanks.
So back to funding considerations. I think we got through that first slide. So additional things you could look at, dedicated other fund revenue streams. Potentially, I think there's been So one of the options brought up was where else to look to, and is there something related to Department of Revenue's work that you could look at? Well, one that potentially is there is the senior deferral revenue stream, where there is a balance. Now, I know that that might be part of other conversations. I don't know, but it's right now. The adjustments that you've made over the years have got that fund back healthy. So some hesitation to even bring it up because it's doing well, but it is doing well.
I just would like to point out that there was a time when it was not doing well because we stole from it, and it's now built up a healthy balance. And I just would suggest that taking money from old people is going to be politically a pretty heavy lift.
Co-Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, I'm not recommending any of these.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I was going to flash out my ARP card like a garlic in a crucifix, if you were.
All right. But that is one that's been, I think, discussed. A fee to fund property tax administration. So there could be a new fee, something else that you could be come up with. I think one of the examples was something around recognition of the effort that goes into developing property tax statements, so the work that it takes to get that out, whether you wanted to somehow a fee would be considered for that. That's potentially, I don't know what the amount would be, how it would work. A statewide property tax, there's another popular one. So you could look at something that's a statewide at the property tax level to provide a revenue stream then that more directly ties to the work done at the state level. The next one is administrative expenses for more property tax coverage. You've actually, for the most part, a lot of what's available there, I think, has already been dealt with. This is just to say, are there revenue streams we administer within the property tax division that there's more opportunity to recoup administrative expenses from? And we already do that with several of them, so there may not be a lot there. There might be something still in some of the cartography area or some of the timber programs, but even then, you're really looking at, you know, broader or general fund revenue stream. So, but we could look at that and see if there's options. There's a one on here, a charge for training given. I think we may have done that years ago for some of the training we provide. There could be a charge there that probably wouldn't amount to a lot. There could be a charge for county responsible accounts that we agreed to appraise. So I mentioned earlier that there could be situations on industrial properties where it's really a county-level account, but they come to us and ask if we'll appraise it. You could consider a fee, but the thing about that to be equitable is there are also state-responsible accounts that sometimes a county will come to us and say they would like to appraise or they have expertise in, and so even though it's a state-responsible account, will we agree that they can appraise the property? And so it has flowed both directions. We've taken on some, and they have taken on some. So that's out there. Something that you did, and getting back to the Association of Oregon Counties, I mean, there was a period of time, a decade or so, where the legislature actually just appropriated an additional amount to put into CAFA. It was $5 million was kind of the basic amount. That's an option, except not a great time for you to be looking at that, I understand, but that's something that was done in the past and could be looked at again, too. So there's drawbacks to all these, shifts works to counties or switches it between the state and local government. It could lead to certain things that we do if we shift work to the counties might lead to more work on our side in the assistance side where we're helping out counties when they have issues that pop up. So it might just be a trade-off. I am doing some checking with other states to see how they fund some of their property tax work and getting, I've only got maybe four or five responses so far, some interesting responses there, but generally I think they kind of fund it out of their general fund also is what I'm mostly hearing, but there are some nuances. Some that are somewhat similar or look kind of similar to the CAFA idea that we have in place. Something else you could do is that it's been years. 2004 was the last year we did a A&T assessment taxation funding study that was done that had lots of stakeholders involved. So that's been several years ago. We have done two sort of refreshes on that where the department did a study on the property tax system. So it could be possible that it could be time to look at it, something like that again, too, a study. So that's kind of the end of mine. I appreciate you asking me to talk more about some of these options. Any more questions for me?
Any questions?
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. So is what we're here about is you have a $431,000 deficit and how to fund it? Because otherwise it comes out of general fund, correct?
Remaining Senator DeBoer, well, that is, right, there's that growing, yes, that's represented or, when you're looking at the
data. With a few questions here. Well, my history is in Jackson County is I pay Jackson County for property tax. And so where's the state fit into all this? I don't understand the 10%, I guess.
Co-Chair Manning, Senator DeBoer. So the 10% gets back to that issue of CAFA. The CAFA fund is funded by interest on delinquent property taxes that are charged at the county level, and then recording fees, a portion of recording fees. So a portion of that is sent then from the counties back to the state, to the department, and then that's the revenue that we're distributing back out in through the grant process. So it's not coming directly out of property tax revenues, but except to the extent that you'd say the interest earned on those delinquent taxes is representing property
and
tax.
Your collection rate is how much on property taxes?
Co-Chair Manning, Senator DeBoer, I don't have the exact percentage. It's high, it's like in the 95% range, something like that, I think.
95 to 97%, I think.
Pretty high. The discount, and that's, again, where kind of the discount might be. You know, if we reduce that, would that have an impact on that and there'd be less paid? But yes, it is a high percentage. There's still a significant amount that's delinquent taxes, but it's a high percentage.
Eventually, you get all of it.
We have, Coach Mank, Senator DeBoer, we have a lien on the property. The county does has a lien on the property. So if it sells and there's sufficient revenue, then yes.
And the same thing with the senior deferred. Is almost, I mean, it just defers the taxes. At some point, they're paid.
Correct. There's a lien on the property, so when it's sold, typically when it's sold, it gets recovered, the tax. Yep.
Okay. Any other questions?
I'm going to turn back over to Sean then for the last couple slides.
Yeah, so wanted to go over real quick the question that came up about the disparity between the expenditures and the actual revenues that we receive. So we've worked very closely with LFO and DAS CFO to figure out a good way to really call out CAFA so it's on its own within our budget and be able to manage that other fund limitation and revenue stream. So we have separated out senior deferral into its own appropriation, so we are not commingling that appropriation. We also have separated out the distribution limitation, so the distribution to counties is separated out within our budget report. So what's reflected, we have a true understanding of what the shortfall is for our personal services associated with this program. We conducted a time study last biennium, went through all the timesheets to evaluate how much time the 42 positions that are dedicated to the CAFA program spent on the CAFA program. So we recognize that based on personal services costs and S&S that the 10% CAFA revenue was not enough to cover existing personal services and S&S costs. So we did come back, was it February of 16, and asked for additional general fund to help cover that shortfall. And again, we are projected to go into another shortfall into 17-19. This slide reflects that our projected deficit, as the senator stated, is $431,400 at this time. Depending on what happens with the forecast as we move through the biennium, that could increase or decrease depending on the revenues. But as LFO staff has stated, we are starting to see that kind of level out and flatten as far as the forecast. So we anticipate that that 431 is an adequate number for next biennium. In the governor's budget, there was some empty limitation in the beginning balance for CAFA. And through the governor's budget, we have cleaned that up and eliminated that empty other fund limitation. Also in package 070, which originally was part of policy option package 109, asking for some general fund and eliminating some of the other fund empty limitation because we didn't have that CAFA revenue stream. We reduced 270,521 other funds. This also related to a position reduction of three positions and 4.37 FTE in the CAFA program.
Questions? Anything?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, I think it's important to note, and the agency can correct me if I'm wrong, but the governor's budget did not provide any general fund backfill for the property tax division program.
Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, that is correct.
So without that backfill, to me, it would seem as if the second to the last bullet point becomes all the more crucial. And that is, we just have to align our expenditures with that revenue that we anticipate having.
Senator Johnson, did you have?
I have questions. I'm so glad Representative Gomberg came back because I'm going to be channeling him for a second.
Okay. Rep. Marsh.
Thanks. Can you do the job? I mean, it's one thing to align expenditures with revenue. That's good. But there's also specific work that's assigned to this department. So what happened? What's the trade-off? What happens?
Co-Chair Manning, Representative Marsh, we were kind of operating with that as a little over a year ago, where we were holding positions vacant in order to match up to the funding. And yes, that does have an impact on our ability to get the work done in valuing these properties. Mm-hmm. So. I mean, we have some room to the level of quality, the amount of effort we put into them, what appraisals we actually get done versus what we take just off what's reported to us by taxpayers. So there's a level of how much effort we put into it. But what we find, if we're not doing an adequate level of appraising, actually getting out and appraising properties, is those values can be increasingly get off a bit from mm-hmm. what they should be. And there could be potential loss revenue then if we don't have right values on the roll. So we can maneuver within that, but we certainly would like to be doing more of this actual appraisal work to get out and look at properties, make sure we've got everything that should be in there and on the roll.
I could just make a comment, not a question. I mean, we're hearing this from the counties as well, that the county assessors don't have the capacity to go out and actually make sure things are on the roll and are valued properly. I think this is an area that should be very careful about undercutting, because there's a price to pay, a significant price to pay, if we don't do the job well of getting the properties on. And if we're doing that at the state level and at the local level, and CAFA is, you know, a major problem at both levels, I think we have a responsibility to find out how to fund it adequately.
Representative Gomberg.
I was going to defer to the senator.
Okay.
And this is a question about this. You said you were holding positions vacant. We've just spent the last 4 days chewing you out for holding positions vacant, and I'm just trying to reconcile that. How do you decide which position is more important than other positions in holding them vacant? I think getting your work and your positions trued up is going to be incredibly important, and I just haven't seen that in this presentation.
If I can respond, Co-Chair Manning, Senator Johnson. Well, I did say we were. We're not. I mean, we filled those. Actually, they were the positions were filled that you provided funding for a year ago. Those were all filled last summer. We had 11, I think, appraisers that we brought on. They're all still with us in that section and functioning, doing a good job for us. So I appreciate the funding you did provide. The reason they were vacant at the time was we did not have the funding for the positions. We did have positions, but not enough funding for all those. So, but thank you for what you did about a year ago. So we're set on those. We have those filled.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, I think it's important to note, too, that this is a systemic problem, that funding was provided in May of 16. That fund, general fund, about $1.1 million. That general fund rolled into this 17-19 biennium. The program is now short, roughly, on a reshoot. It was a significantly higher on a reshoot that's not in the budget right now. It's now down to $400,000-plus or so. And so each biennium, unless there's a different mechanism to fund the program, they will continually be back for general fund, additional general fund support for continued operations. So,
Mr. Coach, if we could go back one slide, please. Right. First of all, you reduced three positions for 4 1/3 FTE. Help me understand that for a minute. We've got three people that are doing 4 1/3 people's work. What am I reading wrong here?
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, Patrick Heath with the Chief Financial Office. These are decisions that were reflected in the governor's budget, and essentially the department proposed, and we accepted, that they would maintain the positions on their books in the hopes that there could be more revenue available through updated CAFA forecasts or at some later point in the budget process. So the positions remained, but the FTE were taken.
Okay. Follow up, and while I'm not an advocate of filling unnecessary positions or adding employees that that don't have work to do, what's the consequence of losing these positions?
Co-Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg. Those would also be positions in valuing these. When I was talking about valuing these properties, industrial, central assessed property, that's the area where I believe these positions related to. So if we don't have the funding to fill those positions, then it's that same issue I was talking about it really waters down the effort that we can put into these counts. We have to value them. The legislature has given us responsibility to place a value on all these properties, so we're going to do it somehow, but the amount, the accuracy, the level of effort that goes into making sure they're correct will be impacted by reductions in those positions. So the quality of that work, the level of effort we can put in, the accuracy suffers if we don't have the resource.
Other questions? Okay. Well,
We've run out of time, but if I could just tee up my inquiry that I would respectfully ask we could talk about tomorrow. I want to talk a little bit more about this cyber shaming and the list. And I presume, following up on Co-Chair Smith's line of questioning about liens that have been filed, I presume that's a public record and that you ought to be able to go back to your shop and press a computer button and get us a list of those liens. I would like that list. And the other thing that I want to know is that for your top 50 that you did publish, what's the status of those taxpayers? And on your 50, is it all individual taxpayers or are there corporate taxpayers on that? Do you maintain two lists or one list? And I'm just trying to understand, of those 50, are those work in progress? Is that does somebody go on the list if their attorney calls up and says, man, we dispute this filing back in 16, we want to talk about it? I want to know what criteria gets somebody on that list. And the fact that we did 50 out of 37,000, I want to know how that works. I left very unsatisfied. Now, I understand that you have the possibility of criminal charges if you do it incorrectly. But on the liens, those are public record. So I'd like that list tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. In addition, I think that there was a request by Representative Gomberg about audits. He had audit questions, and we definitely want to bring those forward tomorrow so we can get those satisfied stuff as well. Okay. Other than that, all minds are at ease. Thank you very much.
That far.
So, Mr. Chairman, before we adjourned, on day two, we had talked about the question of what happened to the rest of the money that we allocated for those positions that are now vacant. And I'm wondering, did we receive that report back yet to the committee staff?
Good question. I asked that question when we talked meeting with the big co-chairs not long ago to John.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, Representative Gomberg, the agency is, we're kicking back and forth the response that will show the number of vacancies, the number of double fills, work out of class, and things like that at the high level, pay line exceptions, and that those type of issues. So.
All right. Just to follow up very quickly, Mr. Chairman, I'm glad that that report's being worked on. I hope that we can get it back before we conclude the time that we're spending with the Department of Revenue in case we have any follow-up questions for them.
Excellent. Senator?
And I'm trying to pursue, why would you be passing it back and forth? It is a matter of fact if positions are filled. Are you negotiating scope, or are there inaccuracies, or are you debating what the agency is? What's the nature of the back and forth?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, and Senator Johnson, the information that came over, LFO saw several errors in it, and some of the groupings were asking for the groupings to be broken out and shown separately. So there's no negotiation or anything. We're just trying to reconcile to previous reports that have provided the legislature.
Thank you.
Okay. Good. Any other questions? Any other follow-up? Thank you very much for the presentation, and we're going to adjourn for the day, and we'll reconvene tomorrow, May 9th at 1500 hours, 3 o'clock civilian time. We are adjourned.